bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Welcome to the photo show. We're a little later than normal. We've had a switch around, but based on the fact I'll do it on my own now, I can move it whenever I want, can't I? So, not 2 o'clock. It was after the Mac show. And we're here to discuss the week's photographic news and take your questions. If you've got a question for us, send it into britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. I'll read it out and I'll answer it to the best of my ability, or I'll find someone who knows if I don't. So, that's it. Away we go. First, we've got a couple of bits of feedback from the other week. We read out, if you remember, about the Fuji X10, and James Kenny wrote in with a question about it, saying that he didn't like the 4:3 ratio that it shot. And we had an email from Peter who said, "Hi, I've just watched the D&G for iOS show and had a question from a viewer about 4:3 aspect ratio on the Fuji X10. According to the camera spec on the Fuji website, you can set the camera to shoot in 4:3, 16:9, 1:1, and 3:2 aspect ratios. Problem solved. Great show. Thanks very much, Pete." The one thing I will say, Pete, is yes, that's all fine and dandy, but what you'll find is that actually that is a cropping of the 4:3 original sensor. So what James is doing is he's shooting in 4:3 and then he's cropping afterwards to 3:2. But because 4:3 is the larger ratio for expandability on that, you can crop the 4:3 into 16:9, 1:1, or 3:2. And I've got a little bit of a thing because there's a question later on about the stuff I found out with the GoPro this week, which is quite interesting, which will carry on from that. But the core sensor size is 4:3 on the camera. And also, Dale's written in on the Fuji X100, and he said, "You mentioned the other day about the Fujifilm does have a greater exposure range than 1/30th of a second to 1/1000th of a second. As you suggested, that must have been a misprint, because I've got one, and it does 1/4000th of a second right down to a 60-second exposure, which is pretty phenomenal." He said also, "It's got a neutral density filter setting, which you can give, which gives you another 3 steps on the exposure value if you really want it." Thanks very much for that, Dale. Really good. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. The photo news. We've got loads to get through, so let's get started, shall we? First thing then is Fujifilm Europe have released the X103D. Now, the X103D is a twin-sensored 18 megapixels apiece 3D camera. There's no word on release date on this, and there's no word on price on it. So that's why we're not going to go into too much detail. It's got two 18 megapixel sensors behind the lenses, and then the algorithm joins those together. So you're only going to get 18 megapixel images out. They're in 3D. There's no word on whether you're going to need glasses to look at the image, or whether it's got some effect and there's a resolution-y screen on the background or any of that kind of stuff. We'll have to wait and see. But it's out there. No, it's not out there. It's due. It's due. The other thing is the Canon 7DL. Canon have released a 7D. It's exactly the same as the 7D, but it's been released with a left-handed trigger for left-handed photographers. The price on this, the normal price of the 7D, and the spec on this is exactly the same as the 7D. It hasn't changed at all. But the normal price on this at WEX is £1,060 if you want it. If you want the left-handed model, though, and they're reckoning it's going to be out sometime at the end of July, this is going to be £1,260 due to the fact they've got a lower production run on it, because it's only going to fit 10% of the population, I guess. But there you go. The 7DL series. BoroLens has also got an exclusive deal that was announced this week with Google Glass. Now, when your Google Glass comes out, everyone's waiting for it, and it's not due out for a very long time. There's the lottery and all that kind of thing when it's due. But what they've done is they've agreed that they're going to get a stock of these glasses, and they're going to rent them out to people to trial for a period of days. If you want to rent them, it's only in the US, unfortunately, but you'll get 3 days rental for $105, and you can get a week's worth of rental for $500. So if you want to do it, go to borrowlenses.com and they'll give you the full spec on them. Leica has also come out with a concept that they reckon is going to be released at the end of this year for 3D as well. This is the Leica M3D. It's equipped with two 24 megapixel sensors in the back, two Carl Zeiss lenses at 16mm to 75mm f2.8. The production run is going to be limited to 1,000 units only, which is going to keep up the retail price. The current retail price for this, watch out for it, $48,000. So I think it's the lenses probably make up half the price of that. Anyway, there is also, and I love this on the press release, there's a digital viewfinder for it, which is an optional extra. So $48,000 doesn't even get you a viewfinder. I don't think that's one that I'm going to be buying. Never mind. Canon again have released a new lens this week. It's due out at the end of the month. It's a 16 to 600mm f2.8 L series lens. It's got image stabilization and the USM motors. It's for video applications, is where they're looking for it, because of the expandability of the range of the focal length. Size is about the same as the current 24 to 70mm L series lens, but the weight of this thing, wait for it, it's 1.2 kilograms. It's going to be available in summer 2013, and the recommended retail price is going to be $2,800. Don't know if I'll be getting that one or not, but what a lens, that'd be fantastic. Adobe has also teamed up with the Red Campaign. Now, the Red Campaign is the people that do the thing for Africa, isn't it? AIDS for Africa campaign. They've released a limited version of Photoshop 6. Prices are the same as normal Photoshop 6. Nothing's changed, but it's going to be limited to a run of 10,000 copies on the license. Now, the difference that will be between the standard Photoshop 6 and this one is that it looks like this, which isn't particularly pleasant. It's all red, and $200 from every sale will go to the AIDS Prevention Project. Chat room saying, oh Christ, Adobe, no, you've ruined Photoshop enough without making it red as well. Adam says, wow, what a lens, 16 to 600. Red is not a good colour for editing, says Batwench. No, definitely not. And the last one in the initial product releases that we've got here is the Kodak Concept. This thing is called the Kodak Kiosk. They're still trying hard here, I guess, even though they're planning on going out of business. This is going to be available in 2014, they reckon, early 2014. It's a digital camera body that's on a strap, so you wear it like a watch. The lens is on the reverse side of the strap where the buckle is, so you hold it up, okay, kind of like this, to get your view, and then you can look at the screen in front of you. And you use your other hand to press it to take the image. What it's going to print onto is 30mm by 20mm stickers. So these are sticky back pieces of paper that are on a very tiny roll. And then you can peel them off and you can stick them on your laptop or your flight bag or any of that kind of stuff to show where you've been. There's no prices, but Kodak said, unquote in the press release, they hoped it would be competitive within the compact camera section of the market. So no idea what that means on price. Under $500, you might guess, maybe. But still a concept. It's just a drawing. Don't get too excited. So there you go. There was the news from the early part of the week. Jolly good. In other news, Jessops are officially back. Yes, Peter Jones, the Dragon's Den entrepreneur. He saved them at the start of the year, of course, when they were in right old pup. And the retail camera outlet has said that he's going to push back out 30 stores almost instantly. By the end of the month, there'll be 30 open. He's looking at an option for 48 stores to be open by the end of the year. Hooray, says Adam. Good to see Jessup's back. We'll talk about that in a minute, maybe. And he says that 48 stores could be open by the end of the year. That would mean that roughly one quarter of the total stores that were Jessup's would be back open. There's 187 of them were the ones that collapsed in the Jessup's branches there. But they're not all the same ones. The 30 that are opening now are the ones that were Jessup's, but it doesn't mean that the 48 are going to be existing Jessup's stores. So if you're a Jessup's employee, you don't get your hopes up too much just yet. What it's saying is the Oxford Street branch remains open. That was the one that I had all the trouble in, but never mind, eh? But there's going to be a second site in London at Islington, but that is not currently a Jessop store. They're just looking at a location that they think would be right for it. So there's going to be lots of different locations around the place. Still, the Oxford Street branch is going to be the flagship one, but that'll be the where everything's heading from, where everything's starting off. They opened it again this week. It was on Thursday, I think it was. And they got the well-known photographer James Corden in for some reason. No idea. No idea why that boy's there, but never mind. When he was asked what was wrong before, Jones said that Jessop's central overheads were choking, with over half the stores not performing for retail as well. It meant that they were tied into leases and a cycle of debt that was completely unmanageable. Jones also said that his existing business interests brought central distribution operations and central finances with them, so therefore that could assist in keeping overheads down at Jessop's. And Jessop's, he said, were pleased because we had 22 manufacturers supplying our business, most of whom lost millions. But today, the same 22 manufacturers have signed back to us, and they all want to be part of this new story. James Corden would go to the opening of an envelope, says Pat Wedge. Thank you very much. He takes photos of burgers and has an HTC 8X. Leave Corden alone. He knows all about the tech. Thank you, Janum. Very good. Really, really nice. Now, what I thought would be quite interesting is if we actually looked at whether Jessop's are serious about recompeting on the high street. Now, okay, if you look at stores, there's a bit of an overhead cost with that. And I thought, I just wonder how close they are on the tech, though, in terms of online retail, who they're going to match up against. So here we go. The online store. How good is Jessop's on the online store? Because the online store's back on and running now, so you can go and get anything you want from them. So the first thing then, if you look at the Samsung Galaxy camera, this is a basic, simple camera with a 3G thing in it as well. It was one of the ones that we hailed as being the cutting edge a few months back. Jessop's are selling that for £399. Park cameras are selling that online for £389, and Amazon are selling it for £299. Now, I don't know if Amazon are a great comparison for Jessop's, because Amazon would sell at a loss just to make sure that they were cheapest in the market. So Park cameras is probably the better gambit on that one, and they're only a tenner cheaper. So, okay, I think that's not too bad. Canon 6D. Now, at the moment, Canon are running £100 cashback. So whatever price that I'm reading out now for all of the other places, you're going to get £100 off that, because Canon are the ones going to rebate at you. Jessop's are charging £1,649 for the 6D. Park cameras are, excuse me, are charging £1,599, which is pretty good. And Amazon are charging £1,449. So again, that's not, it's not a million miles away. It's £200 cheaper, but I don't know that Amazon's the right comparison. Next one was the Lumix G1. I looked at that one. Now, the Lumix G1, Jessop's selling that for £619. Park cameras are selling that for £499. That's a huge drop down in comparison to what the camera is. And Amazon are selling that at £499, which is an awful lot cheaper. Nikon Coolpix P3300, same thing. £399 for Jessop's. Park cameras, £399 as well as, so identical again. Amazon, £310. So I think they're pretty much on that. So well done so far, Jessop. I think you've kept up there. But here's the thing. I thought, well, that's all very well going for the camera bodies, but what about the usable media, that kind of stuff, or the ad hoc stuff, the tripods, the, you know, those kind of things? Let's go for media, because SanDisk is probably the best comparison that all are going to sell. And this is where it really kind of fell down. SanDisk 64GB Extreme SD card. Jessop's, £124.99 is the current retail price of that online. Park cameras, who you'd have expected to be very close to Jessop's and a good comparison, they're selling that for £69.99. So that is a huge, huge difference. A lot of difference. £50 of difference on a single card. And wait for it, Amazon are selling that for £50.94. So the SanDisk 64GB Extreme is more than twice as expensive at Jessop's as it is at anything else. I don't care what you say, Peter. I like you. I think you're a good guy. But you've got to get hold of the people that are making decisions on pricing for media there, because the same business model is applying here. They are looking to sell you camera bodies at a cheap price and then flog you expensive crap on the end of that. And it is more than double the price. People will not stand for it, mate. You've got your hands over your eyes if you think they're going to keep coming back to Jessup's. Jessup's will be a defunct brand yet again within a 6 to 8 month period. If you don't get rid of this and you want fries with that attitude, I'm sorry, it ain't good enough. Bugger me, that's one heck of a difference, says Batwinch. That was kind of what I was thinking. Yeah, used a few more words, but there or thereabouts. Nikon are under fire because they make scopes for rifles. There's the Monarch 3, 1.4 to 20 times German, number 4, engineered for safari scope. It's $279.95. They're getting a real kick in over this. They're an optical firm manufacturer, you know, they make optics. Why would they not make something that's optics? Doesn't matter what people use it. You've got to put the blame in the person that uses it, not the person who makes the trigger. Put the person who pulls the trigger. There you go. Thank you, Adam. They've also updated all of their firmware for all of their camera lines. So if you've got a Nikon, any of the DSLRs, every piece of firmware has been updated this week. So do go online. Do make sure you've got the latest version and you'll get the best performance out of your Nikon body. Well done. Film is about to go up in price. Fujifilm has announced that they intend to increase the price of its film across the board by 25%. So every single piece of Fujifilm that they make will go up by 25%. The cost increase has come from reduced production cycles across the world and is also due to reduced consumer demand. The good news is that the 25% hike is only for the Japanese market, so they'll be struggling. The bad news is that the US and the UK are also going to get an increase, but it's only going to be 20%. That's a lot. That's an awful lot of increase in what's something that's a dying market. You'd have thought, and this has got to be short-sightedness, you'd have thought that they'd have figured out a way of scaling back on production to make sure that they can maintain unit cost for all of these things. I find it ridiculous that they've got big machines that are producing this stuff and they haven't looked at scaling it down over the last 10 years. I knew this was disappearing 10 years ago, and I wasn't even in the market for it. Both of the regions are going to see the price change on the 1st of July, so get your credit card sharpened, get yourself online, buy as much Fujifilm as you possibly can, and make sure your fridge is well stocked and isn't going to go off one day during the summer and fog the lot of it. Yeah, that'd be bad. I don't use film. I can't believe anyone's going to use film anymore. Who cares? Don't you can fit it in, Ewan, but it's worth going into film photography just as a sideline or hobby thing. Always wanted to. You don't want to do that, mate. Don't be an idiot. Save your money and the chemicals and the planet. Film's crap. You never get proper colour saturation on it anyway. Right. Do you own this camera? No. Chat room, if you can tell me what camera that is, there'll be a bonus prize. Douglas Cheng was a Chinese Airlines employee who was walking along a beach in Taitung County on the coast. He found this camera lying there in the sand, all battered and torn. It looked awful, didn't it? Is it a GoPro, says Adam? No. He took the camera home, opened it up, and found the images, which were inside. The camera was still safe and well, nicely snug from the waves. And they showed two ladies on holiday with lots of underwater pictures. Here's the two ladies. With lots of underwater pictures. He also found an image of a boat called the Terralani 3. And he tracked the tour operator down and eventually found the lady who's the owner. And she's the one on the right, Lindsay Scallon of Noonan, Georgia. And she'd lost the camera in 2007 while she was on holiday in the Hawaiian island of Maui. In that time, the camera had floated from Maui to a small island just in the East China Sea, 6,200 miles. It's a good journey. And he found her, and he got in touch with her, and she said, thank you, that's very kind, and they're getting the camera back to her. China Airlines offered to fly Lindsay out free of charge to collect the camera, but she said, no, I can't. I've just started a new job, and my boss won't give me the time off. Nice try. Bad luck, Lucy. Lindsay. What's the camera then? Come on, chat room. What's the chat room? It's a Canon PowerShot S1. Thank you very much, Paul. You cheating it. You've looked that up. It's a Canon. See? Told you should always buy Canon. All you lot that bought this Nikon listening to Alex. Did it listen to me? Canon. Whoever made the case as well. Oh, good job. Because the camera is apparently fully working. I'm sure there wasn't enough battery in it, but there we go. Now then, some products, some real ones. What do you think if you could put your DSLR on a zip wire and you could run it up and down the zip wire, wouldn't that be cool? Well, two guys have done it. A father and son team, Nick and Barry Braun, have come up with a filming device. It's effectively a gondola that fits onto a zip line and you put a camera underneath it. The project needs funding because they've come to this idea of they want to get this out there, but they clearly can't get production values going and that kind of thing. So you can Kickstarter this project for them, and it's called the Linecam, L-I-N-E-C-A-M. If you want to, go over to Kickstarter, I'm putting Linecam, and you can find it. Now, the Linecam comes in two models. The first one that you can see is that version there, and that's called the Glide. Now, the Glide is gravity-powered. It just clips onto the line, and then you push it down, and it'll just follow and track. All it is a zip line, a piece of wire rope, with a connection device to wrap it around two things. It doesn't even say how long the zip line is. And that little trolley there that's got the two wheels on it. All of that is going to set you back $510. And I thought, well, that's a bit pricey, but, you know, okay, I might go for that. You know, I could expand it. I could do better than that. The other version is the Flow. And the Flow is very different. It's a remote control device that runs along the zip wire with a motor. And you've got total control over rotation of the camera and all that kind of thing. So at $510 for the Glide, I'm thinking, oh, I might buy this. And then I noticed that the Flow is actually $4,535. And that's all that gets you is that gondola. It gets you the gondola and nothing else. The camera that you want to go on it, have to buy yourself, and all of the mounting system and line mounting system you have to buy on top. If you want the line mounting system as well, you've got to pledge $5,600 to these guys. It's great technology. It's fantastic as a job. The other thing that's quite interesting is that it's got a drive in there that's run off a 6,000 milliamp hour battery or 10,000 milliamp hour battery. And as the thing accelerates and decelerates, there's a reverse current put through the motor which recharges the battery, so it's very efficient on power consumption. I think it's a fantastic idea. Great, great system. Well done. And the videos of it are stunning. But at $5,600, a bit expensive, says Adam in the chat room. No kidding, mate. No kidding at all. Thank you, WinRider. He's put a link in the chat room. So reviews then. Leica have got a new camera out. They've got the X2. This replaces the X1, which retailed at £1,300-ish, something like that. And this one's a little bit more expensive. It comes in at £1,575. That's $1,995. It's a very retro-looking, typically Leica-ish type camera. From the pictures that I've seen, it attracts the dust like billio. It's got simple dial controls on the top, and it's got a hot shoe mount, and it's got a built-in flash as well, which pops out. But that's pretty much it. 16-megapixel sensor, 24-millimeter fixed lens, but because of the fact that there's a crop factor on the sensor, that takes that only out to 36mm as a fixed lens. It's got image stabilisation built in, 2.7-inch LCD screen, a 23cm CMOS sensor. That's a big sensor. That's good. That's a real good plus for low light. And it's 3:2 aspect ratio. They reckon it's going to give you similar quality to a DSLR. We'll have to wait and see. The ISO range is 100 to 1250, and it's got a maximum shutter speed of 1/2000th of a second, which I can is a little bit low. Shoots in JPEG and DNG RAW, and that is the image at 6400 ISO at 100%. It's not bad, but it's a little bit grainy, and I would say that to be honest, it's good enough, but it's a little bit samey. I looked at some of the test images for this on the review that I read, and there was nothing that gave this a greater distinction than any of the other high-end compact cameras that we've looked at in the last few weeks that are equal to or less than in terms of price. I think the problem that Leica have got with this is £1,575. It's a little bit more expensive as well. But it really is just the same as other things that are out there. There are other stuff that is going to take as good a picture. I'm not saying it's taking crap pictures. I think there's other things out there that are probably going to take this as good a pictures as this. Adam in the chat room says, I'd like to own a Leica. That's the problem, mate. And you've got to get out of that because it's an aspirational brand to own. And actually, when you get one, you end up selling it. If you're in any doubt, speak to James Ornston, the guy who starts off all the docs for us each week. And James Ormiston had a Leica, run around with it, came back, said, took lots and lots of nice photos, but in the end, he flogged it because it just wasn't getting the value out of it. Got something that got loads more that was better or equal to, at least. So avoid that and resist at all costs, Adam. It's not a good thing. Not a good thing. Have you heard of Schneider Kreuznach? Kreuznach. German firm, I'm guessing. But Schneider Kreuznach are a firm that have released a new line of full-frame lenses called the Xenon series. They're all prime lenses. It comes in three flavours. There's a T1, which is 35mm, the T2, which you can see here in the picture, which is 50mm, and the T3, which is 75mm, all fixed, no zoom on them at all. They're all at f2.1. And they've got a 14-blade aperture ring. Someone asked me the other week what you meant by blades when I was talking about blades with the Dennis's lug thing a couple of weeks back. Basically, the circles that make up the aperture holes in your lenses when they shut themselves down ready to take a picture are made up of flat pieces of paper, but because they stagger them around the ring, they create a circle in the centre. The smoother that circle is, the better quality of the image that you're going to get when it comes and hits your sensor. Typically, your average lens is going to have 9 blades on it, so that circle's made out of 9 pieces of paper or card that slot across. So the more pieces of paper that you've got that are rotating and coming together to make the aperture, the better quality of image that you have, because you make a better circle. That's where the 14 blades comes from. It's got a 95mm ring thread at the front, and it supposedly supports 4K Ultra HD resolution for stills photography as well as. I don't see how that's applicable. That's a nice bit of sales chat, but I don't think it does a great deal. They come with exchangeable bayonet fittings, and I can't find a price for these actual units, but I got the 2012 price guide down, and most of the prices for the lenses were in the region of £2,000 to £4,000. So it's an expensive lens. They look very well made. If you go on eBay, you can find these secondhand for between £400 and £800, these types of lenses. And they look very, very good, very good quality. But they're pretty expensive. They're not Carl Zeiss expensive, but they're expensive. Excuse me. And the last story, I mentioned it on the Mac show just now. Lightroom and Final Cut Pro has got a new best friend. It is the Touch application from Arctic Whiteness. It's an application for Mac only. And what it allows photographers to do is create and use an extensive range of multi-touch gestures that are on for Lightroom and Final Cut Pro. You can use your Magic Trackpad or you can use your iPad. You can move the images around. You can access and move slider histograms. One of the videos was quite cool because it showed a three-finger tap and then the person did a three-finger swipe and this histogram was changing all over the place with the way that they move their fingers up and down and left and right. You can use sliders as well by a series of tap technology, predefined taps. And you can use jog wheel and that kind of stuff. You've got a whole load of specified gestures, and you can create some custom gestures yourself. There is a great video of it on their website if you want to go and have a look. ArcticWhiteness.com/touch. I've downloaded it, and I'm going to have a play. I haven't had a go yet, but it looks pretty impressive from the thing that I've seen. What's the price? Well, the iPad application is free, which is a good start, but you need the Mac app to run alongside it on the same Wi-Fi network, and it's only €20, so that's very, very good on price. $22-ish, £15-ish. I've downloaded it and bought it. I haven't used it yet, but I'll report back next week when I have. If you want to have a try before you buy, then you can download a demo. You're limited to 300 multi-touch gestures. So once you've used your 300 gestures up, that's it. It's off and it's switched back. But at £15, it's well worth the punt, I would have said. Schneider Kreuznach does lens design for Samsung point-and-shoot cameras and their cell phones. Thank you, Bookery. Very good. The CH is in lock. Sorry, okay. Kreuznach. There you go. Only 300 gestures. Yeah, but that's going to give you a couple of days' worth, I would have thought, Pete. So it's not the end of the world. And the last word for Pentax. Pentax have added 15 colour options, including gloss and matte finishes, to their camera line. The K30 series now comes in all of those colours. And I think that kind of just says it all, really. Don't need to say much else, do I? There we go. That was the news and the product. Rattle through that, mate. Brilliant. Your questions, if you've got a question for us, send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and I'll read it out. I'm just about to read three out from people that have bothered to get their backsides in gear and send in those questions. So, brilliant. Before I do that, though, let's just mention the Bash. The Bash is coming up on the 6th of July. It's a Saturday, not a Friday now, so there's no need to book yourself a holiday. Get yourself up. All day from sort of 10, 11 o'clock onwards, we'll be drinking and eating and having fun. We're doing the podcast, the gamer podcast coming down. We're doing the rest of the world versus Chiz in that. Tickets are £20 per person, and any kids that are under 12 are going to come free of charge. So bring the family, family event. It'll keep Chiz from swearing as well, hopefully. Someone wrote to me and said, £20 entry, do I think I'm Glastonbury? No, this is not an entry fee. What you are doing is paying for the food and beer that you will drink during the day. And if we all chip in 20 quid, then we'll all get through the food and beer and that'll be the end of it. There won't be any other cost for anyone else. It's not an entry fee. It is a communal paying for the day. It is everyone chipping in for their little bit to make sure that the days are good. If you want to buy a ticket, go and buy it now if you could. Get it as soon as you can. We've sold 40-odd tickets, which is fantastic at this stage of the day. But if you leave it until the last week, and I get this, you know, why do I want to, I keep the 20 quid in my pocket and I'll book a ticket the week before when I know I can definitely go. Well, that's fine, but the problem is I can't book catering for 200 people at a week's notice. I need 6 weeks' notice to get a hog roast organised with people that are going to do beer and that kind of stuff. So please, go ahead, buy your ticket as soon as you can. It'll sit in the PayPal account and I'll just feed it. All I'm doing is operating as the person who holds onto the money, like the Christmas hamper fund, and then passes it on to the people that are going to send us all the contents for the hamper. That's it. If you want to come, get your ticket. There's also a curry on the Friday night. The curry is at 9 p.m. Do not be late. And you need to pay £10 deposit. It's a separate banner underneath. That £10 is a deposit to make sure that we book the restaurant out, because we can't have Mel and the guy that owns it, you know, sitting there with a whole pile of tables from people that said they were coming and they weren't. So that's just guaranteeing your booking. And then whenever you sit down, £10 is going to come off your bill. So that's it. You'll sit in tables of fours and sixes and you'll get a bill at the end of the night for your table, and £40 will be off if there's four people sat there, £60 if there's six people and all that kind of stuff. But you need to pay for each of those separately. So come to the Bash, come to the curry, buy your ticket online at britishtechnetwork.com, and we should have a fantastic and rare day. It was a great day last year. Lots and lots of people had lots and lots of fun. So thank you very much. First question then. This is from Jonathan. Hi Ewan, my friend and photographer Dan recommended I speak to you for your thoughts on camera question that I put to him, and you all might want to discuss it on your show. My 13-year-old son is after a DSLR for around £100. We think this would have to be a second hand, no kidding, and Dan says he thinks only Canon and Nikon are worth buying. He's really into both skateboard action footage as well as wanting to get into the art of stills inside and outdoors in nature. He sussed out that he can get a grip handle, which is used for film action. I've got one of those myself. They're great until you try and use them. Might you be able to discuss the best DLR for £100 question on your show? We really appreciate your thoughts if you've got the time in any case. We'll listen to the show, and sounds like a great program. Thanks, John. First things first then, John. A DSLR with video capability for £100, I think you're going to really struggle, mate. That is not going to come at that kind of price. For stills only, you're probably still looking for something like the D300D, which is, you know, it's a 10-year-old camera, and you'd still be getting 100 to 150 quid for that maybe on eBay. So I think you've set your sights a bit high in terms of price there. You could get something from somewhere else, like a car boot or something like that'll match £100, but I think you've got to push your budget out around to £200 to £300 before that'll become realistic. Nikon and Canon, excellent, very, very good. Canon far better for the video, Nikon far better for the stills at the moment still. I would suggest, though, that you look at the small compact market. The G12 that I've got, you can pick a G12 up for around £100 online at eBay. And it's a perfectly good camera. It shoots 1080p video and it shoots fantastic stills. It'll be everything you need. It's got full manual control with that as well. And I've used that commercially when I've got to a point, you know, where a few months back I had to poke the lens into somewhere through an aperture that was too small for it and for my DSLR. And I ended up, I'd got my G12 with me and I took it out and I shot video through a slit because the lens fitted through it. G12's perfectly fine. I think you're looking at DSLR because you're thinking you're getting manual control and you're getting the focus ring and all that kind of stuff. You can get that with the cheaper compacts now. Don't be afraid to go down to something that's like the G12, an old G10. You'll get a G10 for 50 quid, maybe, a G9. G9's even perfect, more better. So, but it's 720p on the G9, that's all. But it does do time-lapse, which is great. But I think you've set your sights a bit high there at £100 for DSLR. Chat room, Adam says, £100, bloody hell, go for a 550D on flea bait. I don't think you're even going to get it there, mate. Where did I poke my lens, says Pat Wedge. That's for you and me to discuss another day, girl. Yeah. £100, I think you've gone a bit ambitious there, mate. Do be careful. I think it's 300, you get a DSLR, but for 200 quid, 150 quid, you'll get a compact. Wouldn't worry about it. Mark in Swansea has written in. He says, hi, Ewan. I've been watching your comments on Twitter regarding the natural size of the sensor and the need for the GoPro 2 to alter the resolution on the fly as you're shooting it. Can you explain that a bit more on one of the podcasts, please? I'm not sure what I understand by the comments. Okay. I had a bit of a problem with the jelly effect through putting the GoPro on my helicopters. So I started doing a bit of digging around. And one of the things that I found was, and this goes back to James Kenny's point about the 4:3 ratio on the sensor, the actual sensor that's inside your GoPro is 4:3, so it's a 4:3 ratio just the same. And it's 1280 by 960. So the natural resolution of your GoPro camera is not to shoot in 720p, because what it's got to do is take all of those pixels and through an algorithm, it's got to shrink them down to the right size. It's not capturing one-to-one. Now, you can do 960p at 48 frames a second, which is using the full sensor. And when you shoot at that resolution, the 960p will actually give you a 1280 by 960 piece of video, a 4:3 piece of video. But the quality on that 4:3 piece of video is significantly higher than anything else that you've had to run through the algorithm, which has taken it down to 720. It's fairly close, but I can see a lot of differences, and it's far better. And interestingly for me as well, when I shot at that 48 frames per second, 960 size, the jelly effect disappeared too. Completely gone. Then I stopped and thought, that means that 1080p can't be 1080p as shot by the sensor. It's got to have been upscaled. And sure enough, 1080p on the GoPro is something where it is interpolating up to 1080p, because the resolution it's got currently is below, in terms of a one-to-one with the sensor, below 1080p. In that process, that's where it starts to add the artifacts, I seem to think, and that's where it adds the ripple. Now, you're sitting there going, well, I'm going to write to GoPro and tell them about this, and Ewan's going to get sued for saying it's a crap camera. It's not a crap camera. It's a great camera. It's a fantastic camera. I use them an awful lot for work, and they've paid for themselves many times over. But what I'm saying is I've got better results just now. Instead of trying to shoot 1080p, I've got better results by shooting in the 1280 by 960 region, dumping that into Final Cut Pro, and it takes a long time because it thinks it's 2K for a start, and then dumping that out through the export facility when I've closed a project. And you can resize it and zoom in, and it's great. So you're only doing what it's doing anyway. It's taking what it sees in the sensor, it's letterboxing it, and then through an algorithm it's making up the 1080p. So if you shoot at 960 and then just put it in and resize it in Final Cut Pro, it actually improves the quality. It doesn't improve the quality. It keeps the quality high, and it means that the jelly effect significantly disappears. So there you go. That's what I meant. Chat room, I've just looked up the G12, says Adam. You can may have to get one of those to sit alongside when I go for my new camera. G12's a good camera. Very, very good camera. Are you sure he's from Swansea? He sounds too intelligent, says Pat Winch, who is from Wales. So she can call her own countryman out if she wants. Maybe he's in there, but he was originated from somewhere else, says Windrider. That's a good possibility. Mark, I think you're intelligent, mate, so there you go. It's a compliment, I think. Last one comes from Carol in Felixstowe. We like the ladies writing in because there's not enough lady photographers out there. If you're a lady and you're a photographer, write in with a question or write in with some of your shots. Hi, Ewan. Love the show, but sorry that you're all alone now that the others have got proper jobs. Thank you. I'm not a great photographer and only have what you might call a day-out camera, but I heard you mention stops a few times in the past few weeks, and I'm afraid I have no clue what a stop is. I'd ask my husband, but I'm sure your answer will be shorter and more entertaining. I won't tell him you said that, Carol. Please let me know. Thanks very much, Carol. Right. Stops goes back to when you had physical things that turned around on the lenses or in the body, and there was a spring that would have a V-shaped piece of metal that would slot into a V that, as it rotated, it would go round to the next V and it would slop in on a spring. Or you had a sprung ball joint, and when you rotated something, it was popping up into little semi-drilled holes that would then stop it. The idea of stops is the fact that the stops were the grooves. So where the thing slid round and the V slopped into the V, that was a stop. And it physically stopped the lens from rotating. You probably had a springer that you had to release with your finger to get it to move on a tilt mechanism. Stops now is something completely... Well, it is completely different. It isn't. Stops gets used to describe increments of anything. So you may have had stuff that wasn't stopped on an old film camera where there was a physical stop, but now anything that means it's the next value up is just another stop up, another stop up, another stop up. It particularly rated more to exposure rings than anything else, but stops just means the next increment. So if I go to the next stop, I'm going up. If you talk about three exposure values as well, that's stops. So Dale talked about that earlier on, so that's three stops. There you go. That's it. It's just increments, nothing else. If you've got a question, send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. I'll answer it. Anything on photography at all. If you'd like to leave us a review, we'd love some reviews, please. I've had a troll through the stores this week, and I cannot find any new reviews in there. But if you give us a review, just like we do on the Matt Show and the Big Show, I'll read it out. I promise. Yep. We'd welcome the feedback, and reviews make a big difference in iTunes for us. So please, please, please. Do give us some reviews. Last word goes to UK2.net. They sponsor the podcasts on the network, and they're all fantastic and dandy. They have loads of services for web, so anything you want to do for web, go and see what they've got, and they've got tons of stuff that will work. Come through our website, britishtechnetwork.com, and you'll get us the kudos. And we need the kudos because they pick up the bandwidth for the shows, and we consume an awful lot each week. Then go back to the sponsors page. Sponsors page will give you the ability to... take some money off, and you get offer codes that can clear your basket, 20% off in some cases. Everything that they do, we've got an offer code for. You will save money, I promise you, and their prices are pretty keen to start with. So if you use the click-through from our website and you use the offer codes, then we get the kudos. If you just use the offer codes and go through by yourself, we don't. So please use those offer codes via our website, and then we get all of the bandwidth that we need to support them. UK2 are brilliant. You should support them because we think they're brilliant too. And the customer services really are good. Lots of people write to me each week saying that there's good customer services. Right, that's the end of it. That was the Photo Show, a whistle-stop tour through all of the product news and the products and the questions. Ewan should make his voice available on the Mac so that website can sound as good as the podcast. Thank you very much, Paul. That's very kind. If you want an answer phone message making, just send me the script. I'll make it. I don't care. I can do little voices as well. It'll be all right. And after I've spoken hoarsely for a couple of days, it gets even better. Yes, absolutely. Set of questions, britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. I'll answer them. Failing that, see you next week.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.